Hey there, welcome to LSAT Demon Daily Digest. I'm Nathan Fox, that's Ben Olson. Together we're the founders of LSATdemon.com and our weekly podcast, Thinking LSAT. Here's what we discussed on LSAT Demon Daily this week.
We have an email or a quick question here from David.
Yeah, David says, within how many points of my goal score should I be to consider myself ready for the real test? If my goal score is 164, should I be at least 1 point, 2 points, 3 points away in my practice tests? Thanks for the help, David. Thanks for the short question, David. What do you think, Ben?
Well, I would prefer that people have scored the scores that they want to get. It's kind of a weird, it's a tough question to answer so precisely, because if you have a goal score of 164, first of all, it's like, why so specific, right? Like, okay, so really what you want is something in the mid 160s. So first of all, your goal should be looser and just more generally targeted as opposed to so specifically targeted. I mean,
and it should also be higher, I think.
Like, it's higher, sure.
Why is anyone shooting for the mid 160s? I feel like you should set your sights higher if you're going to go be a killer attorney. I can't imagine settling for a score that middling, you know, like, because to talk about what 164 really means, right? Mid 160s means you've got like a kind of okay. You're kind of understanding.
Yeah.
But you're really not understanding a lot. Like, you're making very common mistakes that everybody else also makes. You're not differentiating yourself from the crowd at all.
You're going for free to schools that are in the very, very middle, low part of the spectrum.
So, well, or even worse,
yeah,
you're squeaking into mediocre schools like UC Hastings. You know, yeah. 164 gets you into the 51st school in the country. And you have to pay full price for a just wildly overpriced, mediocre regional law school. And that's not the game we want you to play. We want you to go for free or not at all. And then once you've decided you're going to go for free or not at all, we want you to go to the best school that will admit you for free. And boy, that, you know, difference between 164 and 170
or even 168.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's like, you're at that point in the range where, boy, just a few more points. By the way, go to lsatdemon.com/scholarships if you want to play with various numbers. Maybe David has a real specific school in mind, and maybe 164 is going to get him the full ride at that one school, and he owns a house right next door or something where he can't go anywhere else. If that's you, David, then fine. But otherwise, that is a weirdly very specific and kind of mediocre goal score. So I don't like that. Anyway.
Yeah. So in my mind, the goal scores should be like these ranges, right? It's like mid 160s, if that's your goal, or high 160s, low 170s, mid 170s, high 170s, something like that. And so we're shooting for these ranges. And when people say, hey, am I ready to take it? I'd be like, okay, well, have you scored some recent tests, ideally a handful of them in that range, somewhere in that area? If so, then yeah, go take it. So David's like, okay, I want to get a 164. If I'm 3 points away, so that I'm guessing that means that David's highest score is a 161, right? And so then really, what's your range? You're typically scoring between like in the high 150s. And now you want to go take it and hope you get 164 or higher. It's not impossible. You certainly could end up doing that. But I guess I'd just rather you be scoring in the range that's your goal score range or higher.
Yeah. On the day of the test, it's critical that you don't go in there trying to get the best score you've ever gotten.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's like me going out to the first tee being like, okay, today I'm going to shoot 4 under.
Yeah.
Like, if you decide on the first tee that you're going to shoot 4 under, you're going to shoot fucking 95, dude. Like, that is not going to, there's going to be some bumps in the road. Like, you're going to hit some bad shots. You're going to miss some putts. You're going to,
then you're going to get all down on yourself.
Exactly.
You're gonna be like, I didn't ace that first game, and it should be the easiest game. And
there's so many times I'm hoping that with the new golf season is about to start, so golf is on my mind, but I'm, I like, I really hope that I will be able to finish my rounds this year and not like, there's so many times where I feel like I shot myself out of it in the first three holes. And that's so dumb because you literally can't. Like, I don't care if you double bogeyed the first three. Well, you could still just par your way out and shoot 78, and that's not horrible. So it's like, it's a big problem for LSAT folks who, if David has been scoring, let's say, you know, high 150s, mostly sometimes scratching out a 161 or a 162, but he really wants that 164. Well, now he's going out there with this, like, it has to go perfectly.
Yeah. It's gotta be the best practice test score I've gotten plus a little bit more.
Right. So then on the first stumble,
yeah,
he has this whole crashing, you know, the weight of all his expectations. Now it's not going perfectly. Yeah. And I would much rather you go in with like, well, my range is 161 to 167. A 164 is going to get it done for me. I'm ready to go. And all I need is like an adequate middle of the road day for me. And I know that an adequate middle of the road day for me allows me to hit a couple bumps.
Yep.
There can be a couple snags. It doesn't have to go perfectly. It just has to be an okay day for me. That's when you're really, really ready.
Yeah.
I also, though, I mean, to make the counter argument, is, especially at this point in the cycle, right, when we're talking about the April test, which just passed, or the June test, that's at the end of the LSAC testing cycle. Mm-hmm. And so law schools only care about your highest score. You're allowed to take it three times in one cycle, or five times if you cross that cycle barrier, which happens before the August test. So in a lot of ways, if people are trying to decide whether they want to take the June test, it's kind of like it's free, because it's going to count as an attempt, yeah, but it's counting as an attempt in the previous cycle.
For the previous cycle. Yep.
And if it's your first or second attempt in your previous cycle, then it doesn't affect your full three attempts that you would get in the next cycle. And so to that extent, I would allow people to kind of take a shot at it. Like, you know, we've been given advice. There's one student who was with us in the early months of the year and then was going to take, I haven't seen him in class in a while, so I hope he's doing okay. But he was like, I advised him basically, yeah, take April, take June. And then plan on taking it three times at the beginning of the next cycle, August, September, what is it, November? Because he's like dead set on, I have to start law school in 2023.
Yeah.
I tried to talk him out of that. But if you can't be talked out of that, then it's like, well, okay, you need to start taking the test at some point. And anyway, I know I'm super heavy-handedly making this point, but the test attempts late in the cycle are basically free, because you're going to cross that magical reset.
Yeah.
Well, and schools only care about your high score.
Two of them are free, right?
And then, right. Two of them, up to two of them are free. And even if it's your third one this cycle, if you're going to apply early next cycle, well, then it's August and September. September's already kind of late anyway. If you're taking that September test, you're not really applying early in the cycle. So it could be sensible to take June as your third attempt in the previous cycle, then August, September in the next cycle.
Yeah, as long as you're within a few points, and we're talking David specifically, 1, 2, 3 points, I want people taking reasonable risks. I think there could be some value there, in fact, like get your feet wet and stop, you know, making the test bigger than it is. But don't be stupid, right? You're 10 points away. It's like, okay, maybe you just need to be looking ahead to the next cycle. Don't let this be an excuse.
By the way, I mean, I don't get the sense that Law School Admission Council really listens to the show, but I would love for them to simplify the limitation. That limitation thing with the reset. Just the reset makes no sense. Like
one limitation.
Yeah. Why don't you just say it's five times in 5 lifetime. Years? Five times lifetime or seven times lifetime. Well, I don't know, but the idea that there's a reset date for no reason.
Yeah. It makes the test have different value, right?
Yeah.
Which is strange.
It adds an arbitrary and unnecessary complication into our analysis. Like, it forces people like Ben and me to waste a bunch of breath, like, trying to explain to people the proper strategies. And you know, it has the unintended consequence of enriching people like me and Ben, which we don't need. Like, that's an example of a policy that does nothing to help students. All it really does is help us.
Yeah.
Because we can give people this special advice where it's like, well, you know, it's not actually going to count because the cycle reset, and no one else knows that. Like, only we actually know that information. And so then we get, like, overcompensated for sharing a policy that shouldn't really, like, there's no justification. This doesn't make any rational sense to have that specific limitation. There's so many other ways you could do, like, we could come up with 10 better ways of doing it in 30 seconds.
I mean, the one positive thing I'm thinking about right now with this complication is that some people listening may be like, oh, geez, like, okay, wait, when do I take it here? Do I take it there? Do I not take it? It's like, hey, don't think about any of that. In fact, it's so complicated. Don't think about it. And don't think about your application timeline. Don't think about when you're going to go to law school. Just think about getting the best damn score you can get and then start to turn your focus to the timeline. And if that means next year, fine. So what? You've let go of that, but you've put your time and energy and focus into the one thing that is really going to make a difference.
Yeah, that is ultimately our advice to David. It's like, dude, every LSAT point's worth 10 grand in scholarships.
Yep.
And 10 LSAT points, you'll go from not getting in all the way up to and including you'll get a full ride at that exact same school that was going to not admit you. Now you're getting a full ride to that school with 10 more LSAT points.
So it's really worth more than 10,000 per point. But
so what's your rush? And you should be working backward from your best LSAT. Or I don't know, working backward doesn't even make any sense. It's just like,
you're working toward your best LSAT, and then you can start talking about what to do next.
Yeah. Do you have your best LSAT? We've talked about this little rubric before.
Yeah.
Do you have your best LSAT on record? Yes. Okay. Or sorry, no. Okay. Well, go get your best LSAT on record.
Then come back. Yep.
Okay. Do you have your best LSAT on record? Oh, you do. Yes. Okay, good. Is it September?
Mm-hmm.
No. Okay. Wait till September. Is it September? Okay. Apply.
Yep.
It's as simple as that, you know, and then you don't have to plan or strategize or anything. You just focus on doing the things that are going to be required in order for you to get the very best LSAT you can.
Yeah.
That was a lot.
Yeah. Thanks, David.
This email comes from valued team member Eric. You want to read Eric's email?
Hey, guys. You've spoken recently about not wasting time trying to make wrong answers make sense. I have a way of thinking about this that might make for amusing pod material. In my LSAT study, I became wary of what I called Escher answers, a term inspired by the linguistic phenomenon of Escher sentences. Is this referring to M.C. Escher?
M.C. Escher, the artist with the guy walking up the stairs.
Yeah, yeah. It looks like
it's an
eternal
walk. And then if you follow
where
he's going to go, eventually he's going to end up upside down on that same staircase. Yeah, it's like a Mobius strip of infinite whatever. Escher, everybody knows this guy.
Yeah, the one I was looking at more recently was this eternal like up. It looks like he's walking up and then he just keeps walking up. But anyways, to quote Wikipedia, comparative illustrations or Escher sentences are certain comparative sentences which initially seem to be acceptable, but upon closer reflection have no well-formed meaning. The typical example sentence used to typify this phenomenon is, more people have been to Russia than I have.
Obviously nonsense, because more people have been to Russia than I have. The question of whether I have been there is a yes or no question, not something that can be, I suppose it could be quantified as a zero or a one.
A one, yeah.
But more people have been to Russia than I have. I mean, what you're saying is you haven't been to Russia.
Yeah.
Okay.
Some other examples. More people have written about this than I have. Okay, same idea. More people found Mr. Bush's ads negative than they did Mr. Kerry's.
I wasn't sure that was actually broken. More people found Mr. Bush's ads negative than they did Mr. Kerry's.
Than they found Mr. Kerry's ads negative?
I feel like there's an implied than. Oh, than they did Mr. Kerry's. That's okay. Then that doesn't make any sense.
Oh, then they did Mr. Kerry's. More people found Mr. Bush's ads negative than they did Mr. Kerry's ads.
Yeah, you don't say than they did. You would say than than found Mr. Kerry's ads negative.
Hmm.
Right. That okay. That then that would make sense. But that's not actually, that's just not literally what it says. It's comparing the number of people who found Bush's ads negative to it's like hard to describe because it's like, yeah,
it's referring to the very people who you who you're saying that there are
right,
more
you can't
of.
Count those people right exactly than they did who the more
the no actually it's more. The same number
yeah yeah okay cool
than others did okay
yep.
Like many wrong LSAT answers, these sentences might seem okay at a glance, but fall apart on a closer reading. But they're captivating because it's difficult to explain what's wrong with them.
Yep.
Yep. Like the geometrically impossible architecture of M.C. Escher's drawings, your brain really wants to believe it can make sense of them even when you know you can't, or you know it can't. The same is true for Escher answers on the LSAT. You know something is wrong with them and you may feel compelled to crack the puzzle of their wrongness. But that's a trap. Escher answers are wrong in deliberately confusing ways, which would take more time than they're worth to analyze. It's best just to forget them quickly and move on. Eric.
That's awesome.
Cool. Yeah, that is an interesting way of thinking about it. Because sometimes when I'm explaining these wrong answers in class to someone who's really persistent about the answer, it's almost like I have to change the answer to show what I think they're reading it to say. Right. And that's also what you just did here with this second example. You're like, oh, let's edit it and then see what you think it's trying to say and then see how that's different from what it's actually saying. So it's a little gymnastic exercise, right? It's like, okay, let me find the word that I have to fix or words. And then you see what it was trying to say and then see how that's different from what it is saying.
Yeah. If you can see how you could make an answer correct, then I mean, you don't need to, that's great. Like you just acknowledge that and go, oh, well, we could fix this and make it right, but it's not right the way it is. And then, just forget it and move on. I've always called these like, I have a image of a blender where it's like, well, you took all the words in the argument, you took all the concepts in the argument, and then you just sort of spun it in a blender and then just poured out a mucky, it's like all the right words. They're just not arranged in any sort of a way that makes sense.
Yeah. I've stolen that idea from you. I like it. I think you've also called it a word salad or something like that.
Sure. Yeah. It's just like, well, I like the blender better because it's like, you just take things that could be arranged in a useful way and you just garbage them up to where they're not, now it just doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
I like this Escher answer.
That's cool.
We have a guest with us, Kyle McEntee. He's a repeat guest on the Thinking LSAT podcast. This is his first appearance on The Daily. Kyle is senior director for Law Hub's pre-law division at the Law School Admission Council. Prior to his role at LSAC, he founded Law School Transparency. What's happening, Kyle?
Oh, we got some cool announcements.
That is amazing.
I'm excited to make those.
Yeah, we are going to hear some Law School Admission Council news. And did you want to start, Kyle, with a little bit about what Law Hub actually is, since that's your domain now?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I think the way to think about Law Hub is that we're really trying to set up students for success in their, as we call it, the law school learning journey. So that means we're really all about improving outcomes. So in the pre-law space, in addition to LSAT test prep, this means helping you figure out where to apply, how to apply well, and ultimately where to go and how much to pay. And then in the law school space, we're really focused on academic skills building and professional development to really help students kind of navigate today's complex business world. And this is a bit of a different move for LSAC. We've really been known as a testing company. And I think you can really think of us now more as an education company.
Hmm. So when I think of Law Hub, I just think of like a place where there are lots of practice tests for people to take, especially if they decide to get Prep Plus. But you're saying you're trying to offer a bunch of other services.
Absolutely. So one of the very first things we did after I came on board and LSAC acquired Law School Transparency is that, well, actually now to get into LST, you have to use your Law Hub account. You can use the basic free account, but that's the, you know, I think the first example. And then over the coming months, we're going to be, well, there's a few programs I'm about to announce. But after that, we're going to keep adding more and more content to Law Hub. So it is about way more than just test prep. But, you know, our goal with everything is to be the gold standard with whatever it is that we're producing.
Cool. You have two new things to announce.
So as of May 5th, enrollment is now begun for two new Law Hub programs that will be of interest, I think, to the show's listeners. So again, consistent with our theme of improving outcomes, we have Admission Unmasked and Law School Unmasked. Admission Unmasked is for people who want to apply to law school this coming cycle, so fall 22. And Law School Unmasked is for people who are starting law school this fall, and both are free. So we did a version of Law School Unmasked last year, but we're really taking it to the next level this year. With Law School Unmasked, we're going to help you understand and develop baseline academic skills and foundational knowledge you need to succeed immediately. So some highlights are, it includes mindset management, keys to classroom participation, keys to exam prep, some mock classes, and much more. It's really a mix of live and asynchronous content. So if you are starting law school this fall, you should definitely join us. Registration, again, it's now open, and you can go to lsac.org/lawhub/learning. And the deadline for this program, I believe, is June 6th. And that program will run throughout June.
Give that URL one more time.
Yes, it's lsac.org/lawhub/learning.
And that's for Law School Unmasked.
Yes. And actually, it turns out that it is also the same link for Admission Unmasked, the other major program. Again, Admission Unmasked is focused on those of you who are applying to law school this coming cycle. And it's aimed at helping people understand the application process, prepare better applications, and make more informed choices about where you apply to school, so you can ultimately make a more informed choice about whether and where to attend, as well as how much to pay. This program will be pretty intense and comprehensive. It'll span 6 weeks this summer, but it'll be 5 weeks of content. We'll take a week off for July 4th. I think there's about 25 hours of live content and roughly 50 asynchronous modules, all developed by experts in everything law school admission. So this program will start June 20th and run through the end of July. And as with Law School Unmasked, it is also free.
Cool. Totally free. Just need an LSAC account?
Yep. Just need a Law Hub account or LSAC account. You get both with an LSAC account. But yeah, all you have to do is log into Law Hub, no cost, and it'll be there. You click enroll, and our new platform, which we'll see some advancements on, in the coming weeks and months, it'll all be there in Law Hub.
Okay. So Law School Unmasked, is that on a schedule?
Yes. So it'll be a schedule over, I think, 3 weeks, with some live content throughout. And then there's, for some of the live content, there'll be prereqs. So like you'll have to complete a module, and the module will have some pre-work and some post-work. But I mean, it's going to be a rigorous few weeks, but we really are confident that it's going to help people get off to a great start in law school. And it has been designed by our senior director for law school on the Law Hub team, Susanna Pulvoet. And she comes with a wealth of experience with law school academic success. And I think we have, I can't remember the exact number, but it's at least a dozen law school academic success professionals from throughout legal education who are participating in some way.
Do y'all see that as a direct competitor to these, you know, start law school programs that people pay for? Like, I know that one of the things that some students do is they like, it's the schools, you know, trying to get another $7,000 out of you, but you go to the school a week early or whatever and take a pre law school training program type of a thing. Is it a direct competitor to that?
I would say so. Yeah. I mean, what we're trying to do here is I think it's the same outcomes we're trying to achieve as those programs. And that's, we want people to, when they start law school on day one, to be ready for the rigor of their legal education. Law school is not like undergrad. There's a lot of differences in the words used and the attitudes people have around you. And also, you're just going to be around a lot of smart people. Now, you're one of the smart people because you're in the law school with them. But it's not necessarily an environment you can just, you know, start cold. And we think we can kind of level the playing field with this program, especially making it free.
Yeah, I'm super glad that it's free. I've been very suspicious of those, especially the ones that are run by the schools, where they just seem to be wildly overpriced. And it's like, hey, yeah, pay us an extra $8,000 before you start your first semester. And, you know, then like come get a leg up on all of the other competitors. It just always kind of seems a little bit, I don't know, icky to me, really.
Well, I think by making it free, we avoid the ickiness. So that's
for sure. No, that's great.
On that point, that's awesome. It's free and you're helping these students, but there's also this question that's in the back of my mind. Like, what's the catch? What's your motivation? I mean, what does LSAC get out of this?
Well, don't forget, we are a nonprofit. So we are reinvesting without a doubt some of the money we're making in other spaces in this, because we want to see law students have more success. We want to level the playing field. We can't diversify the profession if we're not setting people up to succeed from day one. And we think we've got the expertise and reach to do this really well.
Okay. So two separate programs, just to be clear. Law School Unmasked is for people who are already starting law school this fall. It's a 3-week program over the summer to get yourself geared up and ready to go. Admission Unmasked is about the application process. It's for people who are planning to apply this fall. Of course, now we want people applying in September. That's our goal, is to get people to apply at the very beginning of the application cycle. So we want you applying in September for the following September. That's been our longstanding advice here. But okay, so the idea is it's going to get people over the summer moving in the right direction of deciding where to apply, how much to pay. I assume that's all the way up to and including $0 for law school.
Yes, for the fortunate percentage of people who pay nothing for law school. Yes, absolutely. So I think you're exactly right. I mean, you want to apply to law school when your application is ready, but you want your application to be ready as soon as possible, because in general, law school admission applications are rolling. And so if you apply in September, you're probably going to have a better chance at most schools than if you're applying in, say, March, right? And, you know, get further and further away from March earlier towards September, the better off you're likely to be. Now, that's not universal, but it's in general good advice. And so by doing this over the summer, we're going to help people think through, okay, what should my personal statement be? Should I write a diversity statement? And if so, what should be in that diversity statement? And then a workshop on how to write better essays, how to approach it better from the beginning, and then how to actually execute on the vision you have for your statement in a way that actually meets the goals you have of getting into schools that maybe you might not have otherwise gotten into based on your numbers. So, I mean, really what it's coming down to is we're just trying to help people make those better choices at every step of the way and preparing them by thinking about, okay, what school do I actually want to attend, and thinking about what that might cost, what the outcomes in terms of jobs and salaries might be, so you can make informed choices about where you apply to. And it all rolls into this comprehensive program that, again, take about 5 weeks for us to do, but there's a reason it takes that long to do. It's because there's a lot that goes into this process, and we want people to get outcomes that actually meet their goals.
This is, sorry to put you on the spot, but what would you say to an objection that was just stop paying so much attention to your personal statement, work on your LSAT instead?
I think you have to work on it all. You have to work on it all. And I think people can walk and chew gum at the same time. So yes, do your best on the test. Make sure that when you actually take it for that first time that you're actually, you know, ready. Don't just take it blind. And then if you don't do as well as you need, go back to the drawing board and take the test again if you can tell that there's likely to be a meaningful change in your score. Simultaneous to this, you got to work on those essays. You could see someone with a 184.0 get rejected from a school because they completely mailed in their essays, or they had some kind of blind spots that they didn't realize that they had. And we're trying to help people work through not only those blind spots, but also to look at their experience and what they have to offer and put the best shine on their application package that they possibly can.
Kyle, did you say 184? I must have misheard you.
180 and a 4.0.
Oh, okay.
Oh no, wait, breaking news. We have a new scale at LSAC. You can get a 184 now.
Okay, good. All right. Thanks. Yeah, thanks, Kyle.
Thanks, Kyle. So that's Law School Admission Unmasked for pre-application folks or people who are working on their applications. It's Law School Unmasked for people who are starting law school this fall and looking to get a little bit of a leg up. You go to lsac.org/lawhub/learning to register for one or both of those free programs. Anything else, Ben, for Kyle before we let him go?
No, thanks for coming on.
Kyle McEntee is Senior Director of Law Hub's Pre-Law Division at the Law School Admission Council. KP McEntee on Twitter. Not sure if you're still doing much of that. Any other things you want to shout out for people if they want to get in touch with you? Anything?
Yeah, that's good. Okay, cool. I'm active on Twitter as a reader, not as a tweeter, but definitely okay. Find me on there.
Today we have an email from Chris.
It opens, "Good morning, HMFICs."
Huh? I don't know what that means.
It's an initialism.
Yeah?
You want to figure it out?
I quit.
It took me a minute.
HMFICs? I don't know.
Okay, I'll give you the IC.
Okay.
In charge.
It's in charge.
Yep.
So
the C's is not charges. The plural applies to an earlier word in the initialism. HMFICs.
Hey, motherfuckers in charge.
Very close.
Okay.
You just missed the first word. It's head. I'm pretty sure that stands for head motherfuckers in charge.
Oh, which you didn't Google this. Come on, Nathan.
No, I didn't Google it. Okay. I might have seen it before or heard people say that before.
Interesting.
Or even better, I just made it up because I liked it.
Yeah. they're like, no.
I'm like, oh my God, no. Something serious. No. Hey, I don't know. Anyway, Chris says, "Are the headlines accurate? Are they ever? I read the 4-page recommendation from the ABA. I read it as saying that almost any qualifying test could be used as part of admissions. But the sensationalism made it sound like the ABA made a full-throated denunciation of the LSAT." This is true. So what Chris is talking about is this all, it made headlines last week. And y'all need to be better consumers of news because it's like the headlines just did not match the facts, the underlying facts. And that's what Chris is saying here. The ABA... like a committee, some subcommittee of the ABA, we'll get into it more on the Thinking LSAT podcast, but some subcommittee of the ABA has made the recommendation that they study getting rid of the requirement that law schools use an admissions test. So law schools are not required to use the LSAT. Law schools are required to use an admissions test.
Yeah.
And they choose to use the LSAT. This is just removing that's a recommendation to remove the requirement that law schools use any admissions test. That's not the same thing as saying that they can't use the admissions test. It's removing the requirement that they use it.
Yes. And they're already allowed to use whatever test they want that's qualifying. And so far, that's the GRE and LSAT. And yet they predominantly favor the LSAT for very good reason. It's a test designed to test those skills.
Yeah,
and before we get to be used in law school,
let's just skip to the punchline here. Yep. Law schools weight LSAT between 2 and 10 times as heavily as they weight GPA.
Yep.
Go to lsat.link/index if you would like to see our math on this. We used the publicly available law school admissions index formulas.
Prove us wrong if Please.
Maybe we're wrong. Yeah. Email daily at lsatdemon.com. Our methodology is, we'd love to hear whether we're doing it right or doing it wrong. But as far as we know, law schools choose to weight LSAT between 2 and 10 times as heavily as they weight GPA when they do their law school admissions calculations. And the ABA does not require them to do that.
Nope. No, not at all. They don't say anything about that.
The ABA requires them to have a test be part of their admissions decision.
Yep.
They choose to make it the most important part of their admissions decision. That's all anybody needs to know about this whole story. I mean, for real, like, it's so dumb. It's one, you know, breaking news. And it's like it's people who are just, it's clickbait. They're trying to get your attention. They're trying to sell you shit.
That's what they do. They're trying to buy your clicks.
Breaking news. You know,
they don't actually care about conveying information.
They're going to. Yeah. And so this hysterically turns into, and I've seen some wild shit. I don't know if you looked at much emails or people, I don't go on social media, but people forwarded me stuff from social media where people are like, oh, thank God. Oh, I can finally go to law school now. It's like, oh my God, you think this is going to change anything? It's not even happened yet, because this is a recommendation.
It's a committee that the ABA that's considering this.
So the ABA is going to continue to study whether they should do this. And even if they did it, it still doesn't do anything, because law schools are still going to be allowed to use the LSAT, which they consider to be the most valuable bit of data that they have about prospective applicants, prospective law students. They choose to weight it between 2 and 10 times as heavily as they weight GPA, which is their next best thing. So, LSAT dwarfs everything else, and this does not change that in the slightest. Anyway, Chris continues, the Twitterverse was predictably bipolar. The left, I presume, online seems to believe the LSAT is no indicator whatsoever of competence or future success in law school. The right is certain that this move indicates another mortal wound for the profession and meritocracy in general. So, I mean, that seems like a pretty good assessment, actually, of what, you know, in the hyper polarized world.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I'm not everything a is liberal. Moral. I'm not a conservative. Yeah. I'm not blue team. I'm not red team. I'm a thinking person. Let's figure it out, y'all. Let's like deal with actual fucking facts.
Yeah, it's a problem. It's a bummer, because it's like, what is it? It's the confirmation bias, right? You have a perception of how the world is. When something happens, you conform that, actually. It's worse than the confirmation bias. Confirmation bias is you're looking for evidence to support your position. This is like you're looking at evidence and actually conjuring up what it means in a way that conforms to your beliefs. I mean, we all do it. I'm sure I do it every day from morning until night. But this is what's happening here.
Of course. We're not that smart, right? We're pattern seekers, and we have all these rubrics. We take shortcuts, cognitive shortcuts, all the time.
Yeah.
And a bias toward preconceived ideas is one of those major, like, you wouldn't be able to live without it, but but it's important to try to notice it when you can, especially if you're trying to think through an issue like this.
Yeah.
Anyway, Chris says, you guys make a living as LSAT tutors, in case you were wondering what you did every day.
Oh, yeah.
So I imagine it could be hard to give an opinion that is fully free of bias. But what do you think? How could removing the LSAT or replacing it entirely? I'm not sure what this standard 503 revision is suggesting. How could removing it or replacing it benefit prospective students?
I think that. Okay, when I think about the LSAT, it's not perfect, right? There is a 60 to 65% correlation between your LSAT score and your 1L grades. There's a correlation between your 1L grades and your overall grades. There's a correlation between your overall grades and your bar passage rate and your success as an attorney. But these correlations aren't perfect, obviously, right? There are people who do poorly on the LSAT, but then miraculously pull out great 1L grades. There are people who do great in law school or pass the bar, but then fail to perform in the profession. And there are those who struggle in law school, but kill it in the profession. When people see those discrepancies, I think that they want to get rid of this heavy reliance on the LSAT. The question is, what's the alternative? And so, yeah, it could benefit from some students who are outliers, but the problem is, how do you identify those people? And what about all the information you're now giving up? So yeah, maybe there are some benefits, but it's really hard to see them.
Yeah, it's like capitalism is the worst except for all other systems.
Or sure.
Democracy is the worst except for all other systems.
Yeah.
The LSAT is the worst except for all other systems. I mean, like it does a good job of predicting how successful you're going to be in law school. It's the best, single best predictor of how successful you're going to be at their school. What else should law school admissions be about if it's not, is this person going to be successful at my school? I mean, that's what they're trying to do.
And the rebuttal is going to be, oh, well, let's look at their undergraduate GPA. But as we just talked about on the last episode, I don't know if this is going to come out in order, but GPA does not do as good of a job of predicting your 1L grades as the LSAT. The LSAT's something like 5 times more predictive. So that's just based on data. So, okay.
for one of the reasons why GPA is not as good as LSAT is because some schools offer A pluses and other schools don't.
Yep.
If you're at a school that offers A pluses, that counts as a 4.33 on your LSAC calculated GPA.
Yeah.
Even if it doesn't at your school.
Yeah.
If that plus appears on your transcript, LSAC goes, oh, nice, 4.33 for you.
Mm-hmm.
And if that plus is not available on your transcript, some schools don't even publish A pluses at all, right? So, yeah. Oh, sorry. No, the maximum grade for you is 4.0. That's one of the differences between grading scales from school to school, not to mention different majors, different universities entirely.
Different professors.
And it could have been 15 years ago.
Yep.
And you could have been 19 and dumb, or you could have been in high school getting college credits.
Taking a college class, yeah, and getting that on your transcript, and now it's affecting you 10 years later.
Right. 15 years ago, version of you who had no intention of going to law school, who just kind of skated through undergrad and, oh, no, you were on some other different path and you got bad grades. Well, oh, that's going to just anchor, you know, you're going to carry that around for the rest of your life. So Chris continues, after listening to you guys for over a year now, it seems to me that the LSAT, though potentially prohibitive to low-income students, I myself am a fee waiver recipient, is kind of the last safety valve protecting abysmal hopefuls from being preyed upon by law schools with shitty bar passage rates and worse employment prospects. So Chris is seeing the LSAT as a, I think he's wrong there, actually. He's seeing it as a, well, maybe he's right at the extreme bottom end of the scale. Like if the LSAT is actually keeping you out of law school.
Yeah.
Because there is a fee waiver. So like, it's not because you're too poor. You can always get the fee waiver. Like if you're legitimately poor, you get the fee waiver. You can take it twice for free. But if you score 128, 131 on those attempts, no law school is going to admit you. And I guess at that point, that is the last safety valve prohibiting, you know, some schools are going to go, oh yeah, well, we just can't.
We can't, yeah.
And now if we get rid of the LSAT requirement entirely, some of the schools will be able to go, oh yeah, we could still admit that person. They will. They'll jump all over it.
Yeah.
They don't give a fuck. They want your money. They want they want to milk the student loan system. So the real bottom feeding law schools, you know, and there are hundreds of them. Those law schools, yeah, the LSAT should be protecting you from those schools and now won't, I guess, if this goes through. But other than that, I mean, I just don't think it's going to make any difference at the top schools, at the schools that matter. And I'm talking about like really the top 100 schools or something. I don't think this is going to affect the top 100 schools at all.
Yeah.
Hopefully that got some clarification for you, Chris. So the committee is just recommending removing the requirement that law schools use a test.
So they'd no longer be required to, but of course they could continue to and probably likely will, given how much they love it. And their love is not totally irrational. What's the alternative?
Right. It helps them predict whether you're going to be successful in law school. And U.S. News also cares about it, right? So is U.S. News going to stop looking at LSAT when they rank law schools? That would be something that would probably move the needle.
One thought experiment here is to put yourself in a law school's shoes or the U.S. News and World Report rankings shoes. Not that I care much about them or even law schools, but put yourself in their shoes, look at thousands of applicants, and try to make decisions about who should be accepted based on what they say to you in their personal statement and their undergraduate GPA. Undergraduate GPAs are very narrow bands, right? It's not a 0 to 4.0 scale or even a 2 to 4.0 scale. It's a 3.7 to 3.9 scale. That's what you're looking at, or even smaller, right?
At the top schools, yeah.
Yeah. Or even in the middle schools, right? You're still looking at a small range. You're looking at hundreds of applicants and you're trying to decide, should I accept them? And how do you compare these apples to oranges? Because everybody's got different majors, but they sit down and they take a test. They have a limited amount of time. All the LSATs are very, very similar to each other. So comparing an LSAT score from one test to another is pretty easy to do. I'm not saying it's perfect. Yeah.
As a single numeric measure, I mean, like the law school, the fact that they have an index to begin with, I think is really telling, you know? Mm-hmm. And by the way, if you want to look at the background on our weightings, again, you can go to lsat.link/index. But the fact that they do this at all indicates that they are looking for efficiency, right? They need a clean, efficient way of ranking applicants because we know how many applications they get. They get thousands of applications and they admit thousands of students every single year. It's a big business. They have to churn through a just mountain of applicants.
Yeah.
So how do you sort those applicants with any degree of efficiency?
Or confidence. I mean, even if you hired a horde of admissions people, how are these people going to be like, oh, well, I can tell based on this person's personal statement that they're going to do better. Really?
Yeah. They take your LSAT and your GPA. Those are two separate numbers. And rather than try to wrestle two separate numbers, they combine them into one number. That's what the index does.
Yeah.
So they take your LSAT and your GPA and they weight the two of them together, putting 10 times or two, anywhere between 2 and 10 times. Think about it as a recipe, Ben, like a soup. They're putting 2 to 10 times as much LSAT per GPA.
Yeah. Now, to be fair, 90% of the schools fall between 3 and 7 times.
Okay. 3 and 7 times.
That might be, you know, a more comfortable number, but still it's huge, right? Astronomical. Yeah.
To me, that doesn't seem like it makes that much of a difference, but it's,
I just don't want people to focus on the 10 and be like, oh, well, it's 10 times as much. Well, it's like, yeah, for a small number of schools, but the vast majority
is, I feel like this is interesting. Now we're talking, I mean, when you tell them 10, then they see an order of magnitude and they go, oh, wow. When you tell them 7, they don't see an order of magnitude, but it's closer to an order of magnitude than not.
Yeah.
Right. And so I feel like 10 is actually worth, I feel like I want to say 10.
Yeah.
And 2 to 10, I feel like is fair because Stanford's at 2, right?
Well, to be consistent with the data, we'd probably have to say 1 to 10, right? Because we're including everybody and there are a couple of schools below Stanford.
Is it actually 1? I thought it was like 1.7. But anyway, we can talk about, I mean, it's all public. So again, lsat.link/index.
Yeah.
You can figure it out for yourself, but law schools are weighting the LSAT. Yeah. I mean, it's roughly, right? I mean, 2 to 10 is a shorthand. 3-7 is another shorthand. Either way, you know, we could boil it down even more and just say, hey, 5 times.
Yep. Five times more. Mm-hmm. That's the average.
On average, if we're just kind of rough measure, mm-hmm. they're putting 5 times as much LSAT as GPA.
Yep.
And they're doing that by choice because they think it helps them sort out who's going to be successful and who's not going to be successful. Now,
but that's
what you would have to do if you're a rational law school. I mean, unless you think all law schools are irrational, that's a possibility. It could be that they're all wrong.
Yeah. I mean, we all thought the world was flat for a time there.
Right. But anyway, Chris goes on and says, some conversations did mention apprenticeships, which I believe is kind of the original and classical mode of instruction for lawyers. But in practice, this seems far less egalitarian than what's in place now, which is already not that egalitarian. It's like trading one kind of privilege and gatekeeping with another kind of privilege and gatekeeping. I ain't no senator's son, no, nor a lawyer's. Could you wax philosophical on your perfect world scenario for legal instruction if you have a minute? Thanks again. And again, that's Chris. Thank you, Chris. It was a very thoughtful email.
The only thought I have on that is that the LSAT was introduced in an effort to actually address this problem of law schools basically being packed with people who came from Ivy League schools. No one else could get into law school. So they said, well, let's come up with a test so that we can find people from other institutions who might be qualified to go to law school. So it was an attempt to make things more egalitarian. It fails. It does not succeed. But I don't, that's the challenge. How do you do that?
In many cases, though.
Yeah.
Okay. So I hate to hold myself up as an example of like the LSAT being egalitarian, but hey, I'm the first in my family to go to college. Okay. I come from a poor background. I mean, my grandparents were agricultural laborers. My parents didn't go to college. I grew up middle class, small town, middle class, went off to college. That was the be all end all of my education. I had no idea that my undergrad grades would ever affect anything. I did not have any intention of going to law school. I didn't even know what law school was. I had no intention of going to any graduate school. I skated through undergrad, got shitty grades, 2.5 undergraduate GPA, graduated in 4 years though, got my degree. I thought that was the goal. Get your degree.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's like what I grew up with. Get the degree. I didn't know that like it mattered. I didn't know that there was more school after that. I hated school.
Yeah.
You know, I had no visions of going to graduate school ever beyond that. I was just, no, I'm going to college because I'm the one in my family who's going to college. And then after college, then I get a job. That's what I do. That's higher education.
Yeah.
From people with my background. Right. And I know that I have privilege compared to other people, but I have a lot less privilege than people who grew up around doctors and lawyers and, you know, like 8 generations of their family with PhDs. So I didn't have any of that shit, but I could kill the LSAT. And because I could kill the LSAT, law schools were like, oh yeah, this dude could totally cut it here.
Yeah.
I mean, the only reason why I'm here, Ben, right now having this conversation with you is because the LSAT is in fact egalitarian to that extent. I didn't have a seat at this table.
Mm-hmm.
No one from my shitty little hometown has a seat at this table.
Mm-hmm.
But the LSAT is what brought me here. This conversation doesn't even exist without that.
Yeah. It's just a test. It's a cold, mindless, let me ask you some questions and see how you do tests.
It doesn't matter. Yeah, the LSAT doesn't care who your parents are. Now, the LSAT does also discriminate against Black and brown people. Like Black and brown people score a couple points lower on average, even if you control for all other variables, and we don't know why.
Yeah.
So that's not fair.
Because what's weird about that too is the LSAC is trying to, they eliminate questions through the experimental section by looking for any questions that individually perform worse for different groups on the basis of race, gender,
and some other groups. And even with them removing those supposedly biased questions, the overall scores are still lower. So that's a mystery.
But there are smart people working on that, trying to eliminate that bias to the extent they can. And law schools are well aware of it. And law schools do give a bit of a diversity bump in their admissions decisions. So they're trying to even that out a little bit. It's an imperfect measure. But, you know, it does, though, still take. It's not, I mean, and by the way, that what's the discrepancy? Like a couple points, right? So it's,
I don't know, actually. I'm concerned it could be larger.
Okay. Well,
please email us if you know.
Email us if you know exactly the bump. We should probably educate ourselves and be like, or what that weird bias is. We should know what that is on average, for sure. We're daily at LSATdemon.com. We're always trying to learn more about this issue, but, or all these issues. But anyway, it's not a crippling. I think people see it as it keeps people out. But I think they fail to see that it also opens doors for people.
Yeah, it's doing both. It is doing both.
Right.
And that's why people are upset with it. Again, we need a better alternative, and I don't know of one. And it's hard to move. It's hard to come up with something that's better than something that's cold and exacting.
Yeah, I mean, a perfect world scenario for legal instruction. I don't know. I mean, it's not what we currently have, that's for sure. It's not these giant law schools charging crazy money and not preparing people for the practice of law. That's not it.
Yeah.
But what is it? I don't know. And by the way, I'm not a lawyer. I never practiced law. So I don't know what it is. I just know that the current thing is kind of a show. It's like a kind of a competition. It's an academic competition to rank people for the law firms. You know, ask the law firms what their perfect world scenario is for legal instruction. You know, what they want, I think what they want is super smart people who they know can jump through a lot of hoops and do a lot of hard work, because that's what they're going to make them do. I'm guessing that the firms are like, well, we're going to do the actual education.
Yeah.
We're going to teach you how to practice law. You went to a good school. That's great. Now come learn how to practice law.
Yeah. School really just becomes a proxy for success. What were your grades? Okay. You seem like you have what it takes to succeed.
Yeah. Fight your way up through the minor leagues. It's not legal practice. It's a pre-training program to see if you can actually compete in this arena. But we're not going to put you in the damn arena, like with real clients, with millions of dollars and people's lives on the line. We're not going to put you into any kind of real arena. We're going to put you in this show arena, fighting with wooden swords. And the people who make it through the wooden sword combat, now you get to come like fight with actual weapons.
Yeah.
At the firm.
Today we have an email from Jonathan.
Says, hello, Ben and Nathan. As a DACA recipient, and hypothetically speaking, if I am able to get a great LSAT score, will I even be able to get a full ride scholarship due to my status? For some context, I already have my undergrad degree and have been working with LSAT Demon Basic for about a month now. I plan on applying for this next cycle, hopefully getting accepted to start law school in fall of 2023. I should have probably gotten an answer to this question a lot sooner, but I would love to get through law school without having to pay a dime, as you both advise. Thank you both for your help. Both of your approaches on the podcast made LSAT Demon feel much more personal than another prep company, which is why I chose to stick with you all. Best regards, Jonathan. You know much about DACA? DACA stands for Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. It's a policy that protects around 800,000 young people known as Dreamers who enter the United States unlawfully as children. At least that's a definition of it that I got from the internet. So we know it must be 100% impervious from any kind of critique.
Yes, that is the truth right there. Well, I don't know a lot about DACA, but I mean, you got through undergrad. I don't see how scholarship money would be tied to that status. I could see how maybe federal loans might be or something like that. Again, I have no idea, and presumably they're not, but it's hard for me to see how scholarships, which are really just discounts, right? You're just not paying as much as someone else, would be tied to that status. The thing though here is just to pick up the phone and call the school. It's an easy question. It's a 5-minute conversation, and you will probably learn way more than you will emailing all sorts of people or Googling.
Keep in mind that you're going to be talking to basically a salesperson who may or may not give you advice that is like actually in your best interest. We've talked about this a lot on the show before, but, or the both of our podcasts before, but you know, the admissions folk, their interests are really not aligned with yours. They want you to apply to their school today.
Yeah.
And you know, they're gonna, it's just like a car salesperson. I'm not judging, but I'm saying that the car salesperson, you know, their job is not to help you find the perfect value for you. Their job is to get you to buy one of their cars.
Yeah.
As soon as possible.
Yep.
And that's how these admissions people operate. You're calling the sales department of the school when you call the admissions office.
They're like, let me transfer you to sales. Okay, great.
No, it is.
How can I help you?
It is the sales department. And so they wear the clothes of, you know, a consultant who is here to help applicants. And the message that they're going to try to give you is, you know, we want you to be the best, very best applicant you can be. And it's like, oh, really? Yeah. That's just like, you want me to be the very best car buyer I can be, which is the person who buys a car today. Like that's ultimately what they want. So I don't know. I mean, I 100% agree. Call. Maybe not just the admissions offices though, right? Like I feel like you might be able to get in touch with alums somehow who have this DACA status.
Sure. You could call the school and ask for, hey, I'd love to talk to someone who is a DACA recipient and a graduate of your school or currently there.
Yeah.
Here's the thing about calling, right? And I want people to develop this muscle to just call. Pick up the phone and call.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
Let me just tell a quick aside here. This weekend, right, I went to visit one of my best friends from high school. And we went down to southern Utah to Arches National Park.
Nice.
And on the way there, this is my total fuck up, but on the way there, we're like an hour away. We've been driving for 2.5 hours and down from Salt Lake. And I'm like, oh, wait, this park requires a permit. So I knew some other places required a permit, but we didn't win those lotteries. So we were just operating under the assumption that Arches didn't require a permit.
Oh no.
And I was like, oh geez. Like what, we're gonna come all this way and then kinda like hang out in Moab, which is the town just outside of Arches.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's still, the place is extraordinarily beautiful. Even the highway drive is like amazing.
Yeah.
But anyways, we get down there and we're like, okay, well, hey, there's a tourist place. So we go into the tourist place and we're talking to the lady at the front desk. And we're telling her our situation and she's just like, oh yeah, well you could go after 5 p.m. They don't require permits after 5. And it's like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And we're like, what? Like I was scouring the internet. I was going to buy a camping permit and try to get in through that, you know, but the campsite was just outside of Moab and the one outside of Arches and the one in Arches was sold out. And I don't know. We were just trying all these things. And then, you know, they just kept spilling information. Like they're not even answering questions that we were asking. We're talking about one thing and someone mentioned something about something that's going on over here. And you're like, wait, tell me more about that. And it's just like, bam, bam, bam. And the weekend turned out to be great. We went and saw it and we went in, we timed right when you should get into the line. There's a long line, you know, these days for all these things. Right when we could get in and still get to the gate after 5. And then we went in and there wasn't anybody there. We got a parking spot. Everybody was saying online, oh, you can't find a parking spot. I don't know. It kind of worked out like for the best. But long and short of this is talk to people, right? Like I'm scouring the internet in the car while my friend is driving. And it's like, I had all the time in the world to find whatever it is I was looking for. And I didn't find it.
You talked to someone, the right person who actually knew something. Yeah, kids, it is true. Kids these days love to just use the internet and they think that everything is going to be there. But on the internet, you get like outdated information,
yep,
and mm-hmm, wrong information, and not, they don't publish all of the secret whatevers.
Yeah.
And yeah, so figure out a way to connect yourself to the people who actually know what they're talking about. Jonathan went a nice first step here by talking to us.
Yeah.
You know, but we're also not like, this is not a thing that I know anything about. I mean, I can tell you, I've never heard anybody say that they think that they got discriminated against because of DACA status.
Mm-hmm.
And surely I have worked with dozens or hundreds of DACA folk in my time doing this.
Yeah.
It doesn't stand to reason that they would discriminate against DACA for any reason, right? I mean, if he's asking specifically about scholarships, I don't think that these scholarships are actually funded. I don't think that they're real, right? All they are is the school choosing not to charge you money.
Yeah.
If this was like a pool of money that was coming from some, you know, if it was like coming from, and it might be the case that like Alabama, state of Alabama, whatever, right? I could mm-hmm. see like, I could see funds that are coming from the state of Alabama
mm.
where they would be like, no, not allowed to use this money on, you know, if you're not a purebred, born and bred American, then yeah. you can't use this money. I could see Mississippi or whatever doing that.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. the scholarships are mostly just discounts, as you've said, Ben, sometimes mm-hmm. all the way up to and including 100% discount. And they're doing it because they want your LSAT.
Yep.
But they're doing it because they want to raise their medians, because if they raise their medians on their 509 reports, it will raise their ranking in U.S. News. It's a very simple game.
Yeah.
And they're going to lie, or they're not going to like really explain it to you that starkly, but that's what they're doing. They want to raise their medians because they want to raise their ranking in U.S. News. And DACA has nothing to do with that. U.S. News doesn't give a shit about DACA.
Yeah. Here's the thing, though. It's going to be so great, Jonathan, if you decide to call. And if anyone else decides to call, even if you're not a DACA recipient, you got to keep in mind what Nathan said. You're going to be talking to a sales rep who's trying to sell you moldy cheese, right? But you got to realize too that as you're talking to them, random things are going to come out that are not necessarily in their interest. And if you're a savvy listener and you call a few schools, I'm sure the exercise will be helpful. Just be careful, yeah, that you don't get
be careful missed. Talking to these people. I mean they're professionals. And they're going to seem super, super friendly. They're going to be, you know, asking you about your mom and dad and where you're from and your whole story. And they're going to be giving you all kinds of attention and sympathy. And they're just, you know, they're professional. But they're also fucking sleaze bags in some cases. Like the person who ultimately convinced me to go to Hastings, I mean, that was extremely sleazy what they did. This, I'll never forget it because, you know, that he like looked at me with great concern and it was like a tisk tisk kind of a, you know, boy, law school is a transformative experience and you're not really going to let money be part of your decision, are you? Like he said it as if he had great concern for me.
Mm.
And, you know, and then once you go to the school, they never fucking talk to you again. They give you like almost no support. The admissions office, of course, gives you zero support. But even like the career services and everything, they don't give a fuck. You're already there.
Yeah.
You're already paying full freight and they don't care. And it's a business. They want your money.
And, it's a business in a very expensive item, right? It's like even real estate agents, they're selling expensive items, but they're only getting 1.5% of that 6%, right? Commission or whatever. Well, I mean, they're getting that. They're getting 25% of that 6%, but or something like
that.
Where
are you getting 25%?
Well, because a lot of real estate agents, right? They're in a firm, and so the firm is getting half, and so they're getting like even less than the 3%, or they're half of the 6%.
Well,
so
real estate agents have repeat customers. Real estate agents can't be totally sleazy because they live in the community and they want your business when you just turn around and sell the house 5, 10, 20 years later, or, you know, they want your referral to a friend. They at least have some like repeat business, but law schools, I mean, they're selling you a thing that you're only going to buy once.
Yeah.
And they, I don't know. I know good people in admissions. And
you know, a good person in admissions. That's cool. That's good. A good person.
I can think of one. Yeah.
I'm messing. Yeah. Okay.
Be careful. Pick up the phone though. Talk to them. Just be on your guard.
Just play the same game, right? Just don't walk into it and get swept away by their one line that you hadn't heard before.
Hey, speaking of talking to people, this is probably a good place to shout out our free class coming up on Saturday, May 21st. It's called How to Get a Law Job You Love with Rachel Gezerse. Mm-hmm. She's an attorney down in LA. She's also a adjunct professor at USC Law School. And she is the queen of networking. So that's Saturday, May 21st, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. All you need is a demon free account. And it's like a how to network. And kids these days in today's like hyper-connected online world we know that they're really reluctant to pick up the phone and like actually reach out to people. Rachel's, I don't know that she's going to force you to use the telephone, but she is going to teach you how to send cold emails to attorneys who are practicing in the areas that you might be interested in. And she's a big supporter of the idea that you can actually start your legal job hunt now while you're still studying for the LSAT.
Yeah.
You can get yourself a big leg up on your competitors by networking your way into jobs right away. And come to that class because you'll start learning how to do it. Speaking of career services, in response to this whole thing with Rachel, we got an email. I don't know if it's on the agenda anywhere, but we got an email from one of our recent LSAT alums who's about to start law school this fall.
Mm.
And he thought it would be a good idea to reach out to career services and tell them, hey, I'm starting your law school this fall. And I just wanted to get a head start on my job searching for the summer and beyond. And so I was hoping that you could connect me to some alums in my areas of interest. And the career services wouldn't give him an appointment.
Wow. As you were saying that, I was actually thinking to myself, I'm like, I almost wonder if that's an interview question you should give to the schools you're considering.
Can I start using career services right away?
Yeah. Say, hey, I'm so looking forward to coming here. I just want to kind of get a jump start on my, you know, careers, my job search. Can you help me out or connect me with someone there? And if that, you know, they transfer you and then the transfer doesn't go well, it's like you're getting transferred to a department that sucks. Maybe that's a reason not to go there.
Yeah. What you're going to get. I mean, in my experience, career services at Hastings was fucking worthless. It was worthless. It was like, hey, here's a whole bunch of binders. Look through these binders of outdated, you know, there's shit in there like from 8 years ago. And it's like, oh, yeah. Oh, you know, and then you try to reach out to that person and it's like, oh, they don't work in that area anymore. Or, oh, they don't participate in this program.
They burned
anymore.
Out. They like, don't. Yeah. They're not interested in talking to anybody.
I'm like sitting there for hours paging through these binders looking for somebody who's, you know, interested in or who's working in the fields that I'm working in. They just didn't give a fuck, man. They were there to appear to be doing, to be assisting, but it was 100% on the students. They just weren't. It was a farce. I mean, it was like, anyway, yeah, be real careful. Cause of course they, you know, we have a robust career services department and they have all these programs
fully staffed.
Yeah. Fully staffed. And then you like go actually try to make use of the services and you just get fucking stymied. It's not surprising. Anyway, it's on you, right? I mean, it's on us. It's on our students.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody gives a fuck about you. You have to make it happen.
You have to make it happen. And one way to start figuring out how to make it happen is to come to this session with Rachel Gezersay. You just need a demon free account. The sign up is lsat.link/Rachel. Again, lsat.link/Rachel. I'm learning stuff from Rachel all the time. And so I would be shocked if you did not go there and learn a lot about what you can do. Here's one thing to keep in mind. One reason that older folks do better in the job market is not just because they have more experience. Yeah, that's helpful. But a lot of it also just comes from their network. You know, they need to do something. They know somebody. When you're younger, you just have a smaller network. Learn how to build it.
Email daily at lsatdemon.com if you'd like to ask us a question or share some LSAT or law school admissions news. Thanks for listening.